walking into Kinchega. Noon, calm delirium, pelicans in flight, keel to the rear, rowing a heavy beat. The line slides, swinging round for a landing on reflection's tenuous grip on lapping water. Fresh red leaves fly from doomed young eucalypt saplings growing in shallow shoreline fractals. The Milky Lake wears a green hue, and spring green shoots have germinated in a dark purple spatter of emu scat, on ground dyed by the mauve stain of puffballs, some forming brown coalescences, some about to explode.
This is Sean O'Brien for Art Talk. I'm at the Hazelhurst Gallery in Sutherland to view the exhibition Land by the artist Ian Bettinson. And I'm talking to Ian and also Dr. John Bennett. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you
doing? Good afternoon, hi.
Now, first of all, Ian, let's get straight to the subject. Why the desert?
Well, the desert is always been a sort of unknown territory for me. It's just been a wonderful place to sort of lose myself in, you know. Coming from a European background, to me it was a quintessential Australian landscape. And just something that no one had really touched upon until 200 years ago. And even now, so few artists have really tackled the desert. So for me, it was a very important subject that I felt instantly very comfortable with. And more and more I actually delved into it, more I discovered about the desert and its subtleties, and just where I could take my work, really, where I could, the sort of big landscape, the sort of non-European space, which I wanted to deal with when I came to Australia. I wasn't a coastal fringe dweller in Australia. I came from England. I came from central England, and going to the desert to me was a very important part of it. I didn't want to paint the coastline. It just seemed to have been done so often, and the desert was a place for me that was seemed to me very important.
Do you deal almost exclusively with desert landscape in your work?
I have for the last 8 to 10 years. I've been going out there on a fairly regular basis, met a couple of times a year to Kinchega, Mungo National Park, Central Australia, and more I've been going out there, more I realise there's more to discover. I tend to go to the same areas, but every time I go there, the climate's changed and the weather's changed and the fauna's changed, and so it's constantly a... it's the same format, but within that, it's an endless format. It just goes on and on every time I go there.
Well, what's kind of interesting is you said at the beginning you found it quite easy, because originally, when the first professional painters went to the desert, Hans Heysen 1922, say Sidney Nolan 1947, they found it extremely difficult. They couldn't work at first. They had to revisit, and it took them time to actually get to grips with this completely new environment, a sort of sublime landscape. But Ian seemed to take to it like a duck to water, as you might say.
Yes, I mean, for me it was an uncluttered place. And I suppose I grew up in England dealing with American abstraction. That was the sort of I suppose the foundation stone of my work, where it came from with Rothko and later on Agnes Martin. So for me, to go to the desert was almost like finding a real space, a real painting, almost like walking through a real Rothko or a real Agnes Martin. So to me, it felt very much comfortable to just start working instantly. I know artists have been going out there. I know an artist, Idris Murphy, and said it took him almost 14 years, 15 years of going backwards and forwards to really before he actually started painting there. To me, it was instant, and I don't know why that was. It was just something that I felt, just the sort of simplicity and this... The way the horizon line gives you the spirit level, the way I could actually work with the sky and the landscape, was something I felt very excited about. Mm.
And John, what is your preoccupation with the desert?
Well, I've been to various deserts around the world, and they're always interested me. I'm interested in ecology, and the Australian desert is a sublime landscape. It's one where you sort of breathe differently, you move differently. What I find interesting about the Australian desert is that once, you know, in Voss it was called the Dead Heart, and now it's called the Red Centre. And there's been a romanticism about the desert, which slightly worries me. People like a nun, Veronica Brady, the literary critic, or David Tacey, they talk of it as a spiritual centre, whereas I see it in terms of ecosystems, complex ecosystems, where the people who've lived there, dwelt there, and it's tough. You know, they kind of romanticise it, and it's a wonderful landscape, but it also should be seen on its own terms as ecosystems with problems. I mean, look what we've done to it, Maralinga, for instance. And it's a sensitive habit. We think of it like the sea, you know, it's endless, you can't hurt the desert. In fact, 8 mammals have become extinct since 1788. You know, all sorts of bandicoots and wallabies. And it shows you how fragile those desert ecosystems are. And that's one thing I don't think people appreciate.
You're both a poet and an ecologist?
No, I'm a poet, really. I have taught eco-philosophy at Continuing Education, University of Sydney, but my PhD was in poetry. But I was, part of it was on ecological poetics. So, and I did actually write the New South Wales Biodiversity Strategy, co-wrote it, so when I worked with National Parks. So I'd never call myself an ecologist. I'm not a scientist. I'm a poet who's sort of interested and nosy about everything, but I'm concerned about the ecology and the environment in particular.
And John and Ian, how have you worked together over the years?
Well, it started very early, actually. Yeah, we met very in the early 80s, and John was writing a poem, Antarctica, at the time.
And which is another desert, a very cold one, but it's a desert.
It's a desert and such, yeah. And for me, I mean, neither of us had actually been to Antarctica, but I used John's poetry as a sort of catalyst, really. It was almost like it was a sort of plane ticket to get down there, or a voyage to get down there. And I just used it as a starting point. John had looked at diaries, Shackleton and Scott's diaries, and I used some of these pieces of John's to sort of place me in that landscape. So that's where it started. And I've always found John's poems incredibly rich. And very thought-provoking and just a wonderful way of actually working visually. And that's how it started, really.
So a few years ago, Ian was taking about 9 students from National Art School out to Kinchega, and there was an extra space. I can't remember how it exactly happened, so I jumped on it. So we had a show, 9 painters and a poet. And I'd like working with the disciplines, art disciplines, and at the moment I'm working with the Maclay Museum on a Linnaeus show, so I like working, you know, I can work with anything. But basically Ian and I are mates, going back, you know, 24 odd years or something, and so we don't sort of have grand ideas or anything. Things happen and we work together. It's kind of an ad hoc basis, really.
Yeah, things just come about really quite naturally, really,
yeah,
aren't they, John?
Yeah.
We
never decided on anything.
No. Which is probably why we've never ever finished anything. It's just an ongoing process.
Yeah.
And John, how does Ian's painting, or in fact anyone's painting, feed into your writing?
Well, there's some ekphrasis, where you actually describe, perhaps in a poem, a painting, is you know, an honourable tradition in poetry, and I have used that in the past. I mean, I love art. I'm interested in the fine arts and all the arts. But working with the painters, and especially Degrees of Abstraction, the show from Kinchega, it just it helps me get into the rhythm of the desert, which is, of course, the idea of rhythm and desert don't always go together. It's a very different idea of rhythm. And the kind of space, and just that sort of mutual support and creativity. And I just had a wonderful time. And I'm sure the poems I wrote there, they're very different, because there's a lot of cultural layers of heritage in the poems, as well as natural heritage. But they wouldn't be the same if I hadn't been with Ian and his students. You know, you sort of work with each other, and there's some sort of, the creative juices get going.
So will you be sitting there writing next to painters who are painting in the landscape?
Well, sometimes, or I wander off, and I took photographs as well. I had photographs in that show, 9 Painters. It should have been called 9 Painters, a Poet, brackets, photographer. I just do my own thing, and they do their thing, and then we come together, then go apart and come together. And, it happens in all kinds of ways.
How we tend to do on those trips is we all go off, you know, in the daytime and find our spot. and work. And then when we come back, we do reviews in the evening. That's how I tend to teach on those sort of trips. And I find it very rewarding because you always end up with this sort of more than the sum of the parts. You know, you get this group, and after a few days, the sort of momentum of the group really take off and people inspire each other. And it's, I suppose it goes back to those very early Streeton and Condo and all those early artist camps where you actually had artists working on a sort of on a shared subject, but within that everyone worked in very different ways. And this is something that I've been very interested in the last 10 years of actually doing these trips, of taking students and artists out there, that seeing the sort of the approaches that people take in, well, on this very shared on this very shared environment, and seeing what they come up with.
And it has actually has become more popular. For instance, last year I think the Australia Council organised a trip, half Indigenous painters and half painters. Guan Wei was one up at Owen Pelly. I can't remember the name of it now. And that was, you know, a great mix, you know, creative mix happened there.
And Ian, can you tell us a little bit more about how you work in the landscape? Do you do most of your work on site, or what do you do in the studio?
Well, mainly the works, in particular in this exhibition, the smaller pieces were all made on site. I tend to work in series when I'm working there, so they tend to end up in blocks of 12 or 9 or whatever. And then that information comes back to the studio. Now, instead of reworking those pieces, which I find very difficult to do, they're very much things in themselves. I've been working on this new work, and these pieces, which I suppose are called pixelated or dots or whatever, obviously I've been looking at Papagna Tula painting, and I've been going back to Roman mosaics. And to me, I've been trying to recontextualize the pieces, the pieces I've done in the desert, to actually make them to almost like a reinventing way of working in the studio. And this is what I've been trying to work with at the moment. I've found working in the desert not to... it's been a... You know, people have felt whether I've been appropriating Aboriginal art in this work. And one of the things that's been very important for me is, one, feeling not to do that, to actually keep a very much a sense of a European perspective in this work. But also, when I find working in the desert, I find it impossible not to actually acknowledge Aboriginal painting. It seems to me one of the main central issues of painting over the last 20 years, and it's something that I felt I wanted to actually bring into my work, to acknowledge that the significance of what Aboriginal artists have done for in Australian culture.
Let's go and have a look at some of these works here in front of us. So these two smaller works, Degrees of Abstraction.
Yes.
These would have been, you would have done these in the field?
These were made in situ, yep. They were made about 3 years ago out at Mungo. The National Parks actually gave me a studio out there which I could actually do some larger pieces, which was the first time I'd actually made larger paintings actually in the desert itself. These two pieces were gouache on board. I've been going to the same site again and again and again. So every time I go there, there's a, you know, as I said, the atmosphere changes. So I'm trying to deal with a generalized landscape, but at the same time I'm trying to capture the sort of weather patterns and things that are happening on particular days. The smaller picture of the two has got this sort of edged sky, which I found in this picture, that's quite interesting, the way it tilted the skyline and gave it a sort of strong perspective. When I came back to the studio, I reused that actually on a lot of the larger pictures. It was just a little trick I found, and instead of having a very definite edge between the landscape and the sky, I found having this tilted sky really helped to actually give it a bit more space and vitality. So this is something I reused again. I've reused it a few times in the larger pictures back in the studio.
Sure. And let's have a look at this one, Love Song 5. Mm-hmm. This is one of the larger scale works using the pointillism,
yes,
or dots.
Yes.
This is the sort of work that you would create in the studio.
These are studio works. Yes. I sort of see these as like journeys in themselves. The way they work is I tend to work from the centre of the picture and work across the painting in layers. So I'm actually working a series of layers and layers of paint, and sort of finding form as I go. So I don't have any preconceived ideas about the actual coloration. I'm just putting down a color and then putting other colors on top, and then that tends to start creating spaces.
Is there a particular colour underlying the dots?
Well, there is. On this particular one, there's a grey. There's a light grey, which you can actually see in the sky.
Yeah.
And again, I use the grey because it's a very sort of... It's a good base colour. It gives us quite a good vibration to the actual colours you put on top there. If you, a lot of other artists tend to use blacks, and a lot of Aboriginal artists use black, but they tend to use quite maybe very few layers of paint and use the black as a sort of ground. I've been trying to just use the grey as a starting point, so that really starts then to vibrate the colours, and then from there the colours dictate itself as I move across the canvas.
And are you using some of the smaller works that you created on site? Are you using some of the colours in those as a starting point for the colours in these larger works?
These larger works were particularly... they were in reference to... John mentioned the exhibition Degrees of Abstraction, which was in 2004. And while that show was on, there was actually a retrospective of Clifford Possum at the Art Gallery in New South Wales. And Clifford had done some mapping pictures and I from the late 70s. And I'd never seen this, the first time these pictures actually ever been put together since Clifford made them. And the three of them were in America, and I was really taken with these pictures. I mean, they were just absolutely stupendous pictures. So these five pictures I've actually got in this show, which I've called Love Song. It's not really a homage as such, but it's a sort of dialogue with those five mapping pictures of Clifford's. So they were, I made them very specifically for that sort of my reaction to those paintings of Clifford's. They were, to me, they were, I just felt very compelled to make a reaction, not just to sort of view these and say, yes, well, they're beautiful paintings, but to actually make a group of pictures which could maybe have a dialogue with them.
I remember I wrote a poem. It was such a fantastic show. Somewhere in my piles of paper, there's a couple of poems from that show. It was one of, you know, a great show, really.
I think it was the scale of them, too. I'd never seen any Aboriginal paintings on that scale at that time, and it was just the sort of ambition of them, which, of course, is the sort of what everyone was bowled over by in American painting, with the ambition, the scale of American painting. And it's just something that I really wanted to try and do, just to try and not emulate what Clifford had done, but actually just in my own work to try and find a way of building up small pictures, large pictures with small particles.
As soon as you mention something like pointillism, you can see the Western lineage in this work.
Yes.
But my first reaction upon seeing them was also, oh, this is dot work,
yes,
as in Central Desert dot work.
Yes.
As a European artist, how easy is it for you to use dots?
Well, I think a lot of people would find these quite contentious. I think there'd be and one of the reasons I wanted to do them was to really have that dialogue to see. People had made these pictures in, you know, fragmentation pictures for the history of Western art. Papagna painting started in the early 1970s, and I think a lot of people have been very frightened about the idea of moving into anything close to Aboriginal painting for, you know, with the problem of appropriation. And really, I just wanted to do these pictures. One is in admiration, and I also wanted people to see that yes, I had been looking at Aboriginal painting, but hopefully I wasn't appropriating the Aboriginal painting. I wanted it to be just to acknowledge the extraordinary contribution that Aboriginal artists have made to art in Australia in the last 30 years.
Yeah, I think I heard an Aboriginal artist once say that dots are dots. So whichever artist is using the dots, it's those dots belong to that artist, whether they're Aboriginal or you know, non-Indigenous.
I think many cultures have used dots. I mean, I think dot painting really, if you really look at it, comes from finger painting. If you give a child a cup of paint, the first thing they'll do is put their finger in it and put that finger on a piece of paper. And I think it's a sort of natural thing. And for me, I was looking at trying to get back. I mean, I suppose all my work, in a sense, is like a primeval vision. I've been trying to get my work into a sense of creating work which is a sort of timelessness. And I think it's, you know, if you look at Indian art, you look at African art, there's dotting in all of that sort of fragmentation in all art forms. So it's I think if I was, you know, really, you know, finding pieces of bark and sort of starting rocking or doing things, then I think I'd be in a tricky area. To me, it was, this to me is something which is for, if people want to do this, is for everyone to work with.
And John, as a viewer of Ian's work, can you tell us how you react to them in relation to, from an ecological point of view and also from a poetic point of view?
Well, you'll have to wait for my talk in 3 minutes' time for some of that, really. From my perspective, a natural aesthetic is really important. In a time when we're urbanites, we don't quite understand, we don't realise what's happening to the natural environment. Natural aesthetics, in both senses of the word, I mean in terms of getting out there, say on a bushwalk and enjoying the aesthetics nature naturally has, and art that deals with landscape and fauna and flora, is so important because our lives now are so changed. The generation I live in is a revolutionary one. You know, 99% of our history, human history, has been hunter-gatherer. And that's finished. Now the world, just the last year or so, has tilted to over 50% in urban centres. So our whole relationship to natural environments and land has changed. And so it's so important for artists, I think, to work with nature, work with natural formations, to help people re-engage with the natural world.
Ian and John, thanks very much.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks.